Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Eric Yuen to the broadcast. Eric is the founder and CEO of Zoom, a people-centric cloud service solution currently valued at $1 billion that offers video, audio, and screen sharing experience across multiple platforms. As CEO, Eric influences and guides his team to be single-mindedly focused on excellent call quality and prioritizes delivering happiness to customers. Prior to founding Zoom in 2011, Eric was Corporate Vice President of Engineering at Cisco, where he was responsible for Cisco's collaboration software development. As one of the founding engineers and Vice President of Engineering at WebEx, Eric grew the WebEx team from 10 engineers to more than 800 worldwide and contributed to revenue growth from zero to more than $800 million. Eric is a named inventor with 11 issued and 20 pending patents in real-time collaboration. Eric received an executive MBA from Stanford University. I recently caught up with Eric in his office in San Jose, California, and our conversation covered world-class IT principle one, people, as we discussed the importance of developing a company culture where employees are focused on end customer happiness, principle two, IT infrastructure, as we discussed the importance of having a strong technology that is reliable to keep customers satisfied. Principle four, IT and business partnerships, as we discuss the importance of innovation that stems from the partnership between the business and IT around customer needs. And principle five, external partnerships, as we discuss the impact of Sequoia Capital's funding of Zoom, along with a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. It's a pleasure to meet you, pleasure to spend time with you. You've been the founder and executive of multiple collaboration solutions, WebEx, of course, now Zoom, where you are the chief executive officer. And I wonder if you could share what inspired you with all of your talent to focus on this area of technology.
Yeah, I think that first of all, I'm a fan of this technology, right? How to leverage the technology and to let people commute no matter where they are. Also, back to my personal story, many, many years ago when I was in college, you know, my girlfriend, she's in another city, and every year probably I can only see her twice a year. It took me probably more than 10 hours take the train, right, to get there, and also no direct train either. Quite often I was thinking at that time, I was very young, only 19 years old, maybe 18 or 19 years old, I was thinking, wow, in the future, if I can have a device where I just click a button, I can talk with her, can see her, that'd be fantastic. I was having that dream many, many years ago. But until 20 years ago, I came to Silicon Valley and worked on the WebEx technology. That's a data collaboration. I thought the dream is getting closer and closer. Until 2011, I left. Okay, great. That's the best time to create that solution.
That's excellent. And when we last spoke, Eric, you talked about the three eras of collaboration, and you're beginning to allude a bit to that. Can you talk a bit about what's divided each of the eras, what progress has been made in each of those, and, of course, where you see Zoom sort of leading in this current era?
If you look at a collaboration, right, I think a first generation is about audio collaboration, audio conferencing in the 90s, right? Everybody, they know how to dial into an audio bridge, a phone number with a PIN code, and a group of people that can talk, you know, over the PSTN phone line. I call that the first era of conferencing.
And beginning around 1990?
1990 to year 2000.
Got it,
I think it's in the it got very popular at that time. But because of that, you realize there's a limitation because everybody talk about something over the phone, but they probably talk about a PowerPoint. However, they cannot see the PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. There's a real need, right, to see when we talk, can we also see the PowerPoint at the same time or maybe see application at the same time? That's why we focus on the screen sharing, desktop sharing, and at WebEx, mainly focus on this use case. After we introduced the screen sharing, I would say the in terms of conferencing era from audio conferencing to the data conferencing, because you introduced the screen sharing technology. I think from year 2000 to 2010, I think dominated by, say, WebEx or GoToMeeting. However, in the future, and if you look at it like a face-to-face in-person meeting, not only do we talk, we share the PowerPoint, share content, we can see each other. That's a real experience, right? Intimate experience. So that's why video conferencing is a new era of conferencing industry. I think there's no solution built from scratch. That's why we built something from scratch. We truly believe video is going to play a bigger role in the new era of a conferencing industry, and video conferencing will become a mainstream product. So that's why I think we focus on this generation of a conferencing industry, and also we build everything from scratch, you know, focus on the quality, ease of use, some unique features. I think all those users who are using either audio conferencing or web conferencing, data conferencing, they are going to migrate to video conferencing.
And how did you decide to do something separate from WebEx? You were obviously in the throes of, as you point out, one of the leaders in this space. What inspired you to yet again get into the startup game and do things differently?
You know, the company WebEx was sold to Cisco in 2007. At that time, I also had a dream. See, I really want to help WebEx to grow the revenue to $1 billion revenue, and then I'm going to leave to do something else. So that's my original goal. However, when I was there for several years, I spent a lot of time talking with customers. I found one thing, most of those customers who are using WebEx, they are not very happy. I feel very bad because I was one of the first several founding engineers, and also I wrote a lot of code early on. But you build something, the customer not happy, you know, you feel very embarrassed, right? You really want to fix this problem. And after we deep dive into those problems, I realized it's really hard to fix the problem, to tweak it, the existing solution to fix. You got to build something from scratch because make sure the video is part of its core. But at Cisco, it's a great company. However, if you really want to build something within, especially at that time, the WebEx sales teams still can sell WebEx a lot. You know, don't get me wrong, it's still a good solution. A lot of companies still are trying to buy that. But essentially, you got to cannibalize your existing solution. I do not think I get enough support. And then I decided to, okay, fine, I'm going to leave. I'm going to build that next generation solution by ourselves. So that's why I left Cisco to build Zoom.
That's excellent. One of the things I really enjoyed about our first conversation, you shared with me the anecdote about how you felt the drive to make this into a world-class solution because of a promise you made, among other things, for a promise you made to your family. And I wonder if you could share that anecdote. I found that very enlightening in terms of the way in which you think about this.
Sure. So to build a sustainable company, especially for a startup company, it does need many years of hard work. Sometimes you need to sacrifice your time with family. I have 3 kids. I realize love them, but I cannot spend enough time, especially for the first 2.5 years. You know, extremely busy, everyday engineer work on the product around the clock. But after the product was ready, and I told my wife, okay, and the product ready now, I know for the first 2.5 years, so be it. Now I can promise you one thing. My wife asked me, what do you mean? Are you going to work harder? I think for sure I'm going to work harder. But I can promise you one thing. I only travel twice, at most twice a year, because I think our technology is better. The reason why we were working so hard, because we want to have a better life in the future. I'm not going to travel more. My wife said, are you sure about that? I said, yes, let's see. And you look at over the past 3 years, last year I only traveled once. I mean, business travel. The year before, twice. 2014, also twice.
Incredible.
So I did keep my promise. I hope everyone, you know, just the use of video conferencing like Zoom, you really do not need to travel, spending time with family. I think that's probably the best thing. I feel like I feel proud of what I'm doing, at least to my family.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, this is a very popular field, needless to say. There are a number of players. We've already talked about some of the established players, including ones that you were involved with in the past. There are others that are sort of your era, if you will, the current era, more recent entrance to the field. How do you see yourself differentiating from a crowded pack of companies that would wish to do things similar to what you're doing?
That's a wonderful question. Actually, before I started the company, when I shared my plan with quite a few friends or some other angel investors or investors, they all challenged me. Said, hey, this space is extremely crowded. The possibility to build something way better than any other solution out there is not very high. You better think about doing something else rather than, you know, keep focusing on this market. However, I told them, I tried all the solutions. None of those solutions worked very well. Then I realized there's opportunity. If I can build something to make users very happy, as long as I can do that, I think there's an opportunity there. And so the key differentiation is we really focus on making our existing customer happy. Any interaction between customers and Zoom, no matter support or the sales interaction or product interaction, we just let the customer feel very happy. They can count on us. When they are using Zoom, they feel like, wow, this experience is better than any other solutions we were using before. Every day when they are using Zoom, they feel happy. And then they can count on us to run their business upon Zoom platform. I think that's the number one key differentiation. That's why we're winning. Every day, the customers who call to us switched from other solutions to our solution.
Has the typical means with which Zoom has entered the enterprise, has it been bottom up? That is to say, you know, engineers, some more junior people perhaps finding out about it and beginning to use it and sort of developing a bottom up groundswell, if you will, and demand for it? Is it more typically top down, one of the chiefs of the organization getting to know it? How has it been introduced as it's begun to take hold within corporations?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. So when we began to sell this product, we knew we are going to focus on both SMB and the large enterprise. Because we have a freemium product. When we started, we have so many SMB customers. But very soon, we started having a lot of enterprise customers as well. Our approach is more like a hybrid approach, you know, from bottom up as well as top down. Because, you know, take the very big customer. See, I give one example, like IBM, for example, right? There's so many users there. They are using Zoom solution for free for a while, and they really like our solution, and they started paying us from one department to two departments. Even their corporate side, they have other solutions. Their customer, the users, just like our solution. At the same time, we also talk with the IT team as well. Quite often, see a big, large enterprise customer, we see, you know, two or three departments who already are using Zoom solution, and then we talk with their IT. Hey, we have so many users from your organization, and how about the enable enterprise features? And we started a meaningful dialogue with IT, and then IT said, wow, I did not realize that so many users who already love your solution. And then we start to have a site license. So essentially, we get the end user to try our product first, make sure end user like it, and also we started talking with IT.
I see. That's interesting. I wanted to also understand from you, in the initial stages, you talked about some of those early conversations you had with friends and with angel investors. I know that actually, especially in the early days, you were not in a rush to get big quickly. And I'm curious about the rationale there, especially in this part of the world. So many companies are looking to just grow. And what was the rationale in being a little bit more deliberate this time around?
I think looking back over the past 5.5 years, I would say the best decision we made is for the first 2 years, we were just heads down to the product side. And we did not do anything. We keep improving our platform, make sure the platform really solid, make sure product experience is great. For the first 2 years, nothing, just to focus on the product side. Because otherwise, if your product foundation not solid, and then they start selling, you might get customers. However, the customer may not be happy, and as you need to fix those problems, it's kind of also need to get new customers. You feel like sort of like a chaos. Right? It's kind of not very well organized in terms of the pace. So our philosophy is, as long as we start selling the product, we should have a high confidence. The first customer should be very happy. If you don't have that confidence, we would like to take a step back to make sure the product is ready. So that's very important. That's a foundation. We do not want to grow too fast, because when you grow too fast, guess what? You need to hire so many salespeople. You need to pursue all those new prospect customers. If you do that, every day, say you have 10 hours, you spend 5 hours on that, you only spend another rest of 5 hours from your existing customers. We would like to spend 9 hours spending the time on existing customers to keep existing customers happy rather than pursuing new customers. That's also, we think we don't want to grow too fast. But however, if you keep your existing customer happy, in the long run, you still can grow very fast.
And what do you hear from customers, and likewise, what do you tell potential customers is the primary value they can get out of using a solution like Zoom? What are ways of, that they would sort of prove the ROI, so to speak?
So first of all, we will tell some why we built this solution and what kinds of pain point you have. Because I also suffered from those issues, you know, before I left Cisco. All those issues like, hey, you have multiple solutions. None of those solutions can talk to each other. The front end user experience is different. Back end architecture is different. Because when it comes to collaboration, they use probably 4, 5, 6 different vendors' solutions. None of those solutions were built from scratch to embrace video collaboration. Right? The customer, they understand that. At the same time, also tells them, we really do not want to push you to subscribe to our solution. We give you free access. You test it. If solution is better than the solution you are using, let's continue. We are going to have a follow-up conversation. At the same time, also tells them, our company culture is really focusing on delivering happiness to our customers. Quite often, we do leave the money on the table. We did it on purpose because we want to build the trusted relationship. We tell them, the reason why we build a solution, we really want to deliver happiness to our customers, make the world a better place. And not just like, if we can charge you more, we just charge you more. That's not our philosophy. And because of that, customers really trust us. We also want to build a long-term partnership with customers. That's why when customers realize that, they say, wow, this is a company we can trust. We can count on Zoom for the next several years for their collaboration solution.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I'm curious, as you think about trends that are emerging, I think of, like, for instance, virtual reality as something that's likely to impact this space once that continues to mature, the possibility of, you know, incorporating that into these sorts of solutions. Just to take one example, there are others as well. How do you think about, for lack of better terminology, R&D and exploring how new trends, new technologies might impact the solution you have in the future?
Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of augmented reality because that can be applied to the business world. Virtual reality is a little bit different, mm-hmm. more consumer-driven gaming technology.
Yep.
So every day I spend a lot of time talking with a lot of people via Zoom platform. But one thing I realized also is the limitation of technology is that I cannot shake hands with those people who are in remote site. No matter I spend 1 hour or 2 hours, we really enjoy talking. But before we ended the meeting, I say, wow, I want to give you a hug. I cannot do that. I want to shake hands. I cannot do that. So imagine in the future, you can leverage augmented reality technology. And you stand there when you talk, you feel like you are exactly the same in a conference room. You can give a hug. I think that's a real intimate experience. I truly believe somebody will get there with AR, with new technology, mm-hmm. yeah, with sensor technology. I think I do not know when, but we keep an eye on that. We also started investing in that area as well. So whenever technology is ready, we want to be the killer application.
Yeah, that's great. It was recently announced a new round of funding. I think it's the D round through Sequoia. And I'm curious, how do you see leveraging this new round of funding? What sorts of new things you'll be incorporating into this as you look to the future?
You know, Sequoia is number one VC worldwide, right? Not only U.S., but also China and other countries as well. You look at their track record, it is wonderful, very consistent. I admire them for many, many years because, you know, quite often, you know, similar to a company, if you can keep very consistent track record, that means something there is different. I would say probably they have a great culture. And the partner there really nice because, you know, our philosophy is I would like to find those investors who invest in me, not just in our business or product or any other things, because business can be changed, right? So that's why I really like them, and we made it a deal. How to leverage that connection, leverage that funding to go big, we're still working on that. Mm-hmm. But overall, I would say we really wanted to make sure keep delivering happiness to our customers. And in the next several years, we really want to make sure, hey, Zoom can be the number one platform you can count on. Mm-hmm. You know, keep delivering happiness to our customers. And overall, our goal is to make sure to make the world a better place, to leverage technology, to make people, they feel they are connected. Into this world, like a social networking like Facebook or Twitter is very popular. However, one thing I found, the more social networking tools you are using, the more lonely you feel. Because quite often you take a picture, long time ago, you take a picture, probably invite your friend, have a dinner, you share the photo with them. You can gather together. However, now, if you can take some pictures, you just post to Facebook. You never meet with your friends anymore, right? Probably 3 years, you still never meet with your friends. Even if you feel like you are connected, you are not. I think video conferencing can really help. Hopefully, I think we can leverage this funding to keep innovating, keep delivering happiness to our customers.
Yeah, I'm also curious. You're a native of China. You've been in the U.S. for quite some time now and are a representation that has happened so many times of somebody who's an immigrant to the U.S. and develops really phenomenal companies here. The percentage of Silicon Valley companies that are founded by somebody who's immigrated to the U.S. actually is very high. And I'm curious, what did you find that was special about this environment? Why have you elected to make your home here as opposed to your homeland of China or elsewhere for that matter?
Yeah, I came here in 1997. So by August of this year will be 20 wow. years. Because before I came to Silicon Valley, I was 27. I was in Beijing, China. When I saw internet, I immediately realized that is going to change everything. However, I was young at that time. I was not patient enough. At that time, 1996, I guess, Yahoo here, so popular. Jerry is wonderful, is my idol, right? Mm-hmm. And also Netscape, also in the public, AOL, also so popular. At that time, 1996, China, internet not there yet. I was not patient. I thought, oh, maybe next 5 to 10 years, we might have internet. And I really want to embrace the internet. And at that time, I thought an opportunity. So the WebEx co-founder, he knew me before, and he started this company. He's recruiting some engineers all over the world. That's why I came here. So before I came here, I just want to come here to take a look. If I can fit very well, I might live here and do something. If not, I probably go back, right? I even do not speak English when I came here. So. And the only thing I knew, I write a code. However, after I came here, I realized one thing. It's very unique. Any other places, I think, have something similar. Silicon Valley, the reason why this is a worldwide innovation center is very open culture. Embrace diversity. You see the people from all over the world, India, China, Europe, Africa, Japan, and all over the world, they're coming here. Because when you have so many people with very different background gather together, guess what? That's where the innovation coming from. That's why you see all the great companies, right, they're coming from. I think I'm a fan of technology. I would say, okay, this is great. I really like the culture here. That's why I decided to settle down and also worked at WebEx for many years. And then after we sold to Cisco, also there for many years. Now I start a company still here in Silicon Valley. I think my view is Silicon Valley is not the technology center of the United States, but also the technology center of the whole world. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of other countries and other places, they all learn from why Silicon Valley is so successful. It's driving the whole world economy forward. Mm-hmm. That's why I really like Silicon Valley.
That's excellent. As you point out, as it is such an extraordinary technology center, great technologists have tremendous opportunities simply by being here, being in this area. What have you found motivates people? As you have assembled a team here and as you have helped them grow, what have you found have been the key points in terms of motivation for them to stay here as opposed to look other places?
Yeah. So first of all, our philosophy is, at least at Zoom, we would like to create a company to kind of promote the self-motivation. I told our managers, don't spend too much time to motivate your employees. you got to create an environment, a culture where employees it can motivate themselves. That's really important because self-motivation is more sustainable. However, how to create a culture where employees they can motivate themselves? That's not easy. But one thing I learned is, as long as we can keep employees happy, when they wake up, they really want to come to office to work. Think about how to deliver happiness to customers, how to deliver happiness to each other, how to grow themselves to the next level. Meaning, if they come here, they feel like, oh, this is a very happy workspace. I enjoy working here. I think if you do that, I think the employees, probably they are very, very self-motivated. I think they do not want to go to any other place to work because they feel like I can trust my teammates. Every day I enjoy working together with our teammates and also keep delivering happiness to the customers. Guess what? If you do that, customer also deliver happiness back to you. It's kind of very positive ecosystem. That's why I think if you ask our employees, I would say number one reason they like to work here is they like the company culture. They feel happy.
That's wonderful. Well, Eric Yuen, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and for sharing your perspectives on the many ideas that you have pursued and the ways in which you've become a successful entrepreneur.
Thank you. My pleasure. Appreciate it for your time.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.